ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So last week we had completed the chapter Exigency of Action. So here the next chapter in this book is Strength of Emotion. Every human being is made up of a physical body, mind, intellect, and enlivened by the Atma. So he, having covered the basics in the beginning, in the fifth chapter he talked about using the body, how do you act? Because the idea is to reduce the vasanas. You have to act, but reduce the vasanas. So what is that right technique? Why acting is important? And what are the types of activities? How one can, through action, rise above the desires? All that he discussed in the previous chapter. Now, he is going to talk about the emotions, which is the subtler level compared to the body. Now, these emotions have to be made pure. When they are pure, there will be a strength. When they are impure, there will be a weakness. So when you say strength and weakness, pure, impure, the more unselfish they are, the more pure and strong it will be. The more selfish it is, the more impure and weak it will be. So how to convert the impure emotions to pure emotions? How to make them strong from being weak? You know? So Vedanta never takes away the emotions from you. But it will not allow you to become emotional if you understand Vedanta. So, this becoming emotional is when your personal mind, ego gets involved. Then you, become very emotional. You bring in the reason, logic, look at it from a larger picture, then you will have emotions, but you won't allow the emotions to victimize you. And that's what he's going to talk about here. How to convert the weak emotions to pillar of strength. So therefore, this long understanding which is there, that Vedanta will take away the emotions from the people. It is not like that. It will not take away the emotions. It will purify the emotions. When the emotions are purified, purified means what? It's not consolidated, solidified in one place. You know, when you are selfish, all your emotions are solidified upon yourself. Now, when the reason logic comes, what happens is the emotion starts spreading towards the larger circle. That's the idea. The moment intellect comes, it starts spreading towards a larger and larger circle. That's all it is. So therefore he says, the very first topic is emotion and intellect. You need to understand. It's a very important lesson actually. Because you will find one set of people having emotions but no reason. There are people who have reason, logic, but no emotions. How to combine the two? What you feel, your intellect must be able to understand. What you understand, your emotion should be there supporting it, feeling it. You know? Then when there is this confluence of emotion and reason, then you really progress and grow in life. You'll experience joy also. Therefore, he says emotion and intellect. That's the topic. So, Sandhyaji, you want to read?
Sure, Guruji. I can read.
Yes, please.
Emotion and intellect. The philosophy of Vedanta is profound. It eludes the grasp of the common person. Its true spirit has been lost. Time and again, critics raise an objection to Vedanta. They believe it inculcates callousness, that it has little regard for human relation, destroys humane feeling, makes one indifferent, irresponsible towards the affairs of the world. The criticism is baseless, untenable. Ironically, Vedanta engenders chaste feelings. It only changes the quality of feeling from sensual to sublime, transforms the character of emotion from personal to impersonal, selfish to unselfish, preferential to universal, converts the frail form of emotion into a pillar of strength. In fact, the transformation is brought about by the clarity of thought that it develops. Thus, does Vedanta rehabilitate, regenerate humanity with human nature? Yet its great blessing is misconstrued and denied to the human race.
So this is what I said. First of all, people don't understand it correctly. As Shakespeare says, don't call a dog mad and kill it. You will categorize the dog as mad and then you will kill it, put to death. Don't do that with Vedanta. He says, all it does is it converts the frail form of emotion into a pillar of strength. The transformation is brought about with the clarity of, as you begin to understand more and more about the world and about yourself, your emotions cannot thereafter be just focused on your ego. It's not possible. You will start expanding, you know, as you begin to understand more and more about the world and about yourself. So therefore, he says, it converts the frail form of emotion into pillar of strength. Transformation is brought about by the clarity that it develops. Thus Vedanta rehabilitate, regenerate humanity with human nature. You become more sensible, loving, caring, identifying with a larger circle. Therefore, he says, its blessing, great blessing, is misconstrued and denied to the human race. People think when you come to Vedanta, you become very callous. You know, there are people who just reason with no love, emotion. But there are people who have understood Vedanta from the trip. They just got enamored by the concepts of Vedanta. But if you really deeply understand the concepts of Vedanta, it will definitely bring about this identification. Even somebody whom you do not know, you've not met. But if you've been studying Vedanta, you will genuinely feel sad when something bad happens to you. You don't know them. You never met them. You just read in the newspaper. Because your identification has spread to a larger number of people, larger group, larger species. You know? Nobody tells you all this. It automatically happens. See, as a sadhana, sometimes people forcefully try to do that. But when you grow, all these should be spontaneous. Why you want to, for example, just talking, for example. You know, in the academy, when I was studying in the ashram, there was this guy called Nathan. His full name is Nathaniel. We used to call him Nathan. That fellow, if he opens his mouth and talks, you have to really focus. He'll talk very softly. And in the dining hall, everybody is talking loudly and all that. But he's talking very softly. And that's how he is. So, you have to really focus on what he says. He is so cultured that way. He'll talk very soft. Yeah, Alan, you know. You don't know what he's saying. You do not want to disturb your environment by making noise. Just because you are having a spiritual session in your house, you will put loudspeakers out of your house, in front of your house, and then bhajan is going on in the whole neighborhood, nobody can see. You, first of all, if you are spiritual, you will understand that so many other people living in this world, why you want to disturb them? You know? So, this is not something that somebody has to tell you. Naturally comes. So at all levels, unnecessarily Why do I have to travel? If the travel is not necessary, why will I have to travel? Unnecessarily, I'll be destroying the environment. This naturally comes. Automatically, a person who starts transforming oneself more and more spiritual, this will naturally happen. That's all it is. So simplicity helps you in understanding Vedanta, but when you understand Vedanta, you will become simple. It is not that you are averse to travel, but if there is no reason to travel, you won't. Just like that. Because you do not want to destroy the environment. You do not want to cause any harm to anybody. Because you start seeing yourself reflected in more and more people. That's what he's saying. This great blessing is misconstrued and denied to the human race. Please continue.
People wrongly believe that a person imbued with Vedanta is devoid of emotion, not realizing that Vedanta only cautions humanity against the onslaught of emotions. The flood of emotions can overpower you, victimize you, literally destroy you. William Shakespeare portrays this truth magnificently in his plays King Lear, Othello, Macbeth and others. You must therefore keep your emotions well under the control of your discerning intellect. Be a master, no slave of your passion. You may entertain passion and not turn passionate. Harbor emotion and not become emotional. Have sentiment and not be sentimental. Emotionalism upsets your intellectual balance and poise. Passive subservience to emotion ruins your material and even spiritual well-being. Your intellect, rather than the impulse of your mind, should guide your life's activities. Do not fall a prey to your like and dislike, nor yield to your feelings and emotion. Learn to become self-sufficient. It is the prerogative of a human race.
Yeah. So, yielding to the emotion may give you a kick in the beginning, but it actually kicks you. For example, anger. Any emotion, when you yield to it, you know, without reason guiding you, it destroys you. So he gives this Shakespeare's plays as example here. King Lear, he falls for flattery. Othello, he fell for jealousy. And Macbeth, greed. Duncan, the king, is his benefactor. And this fellow was so greedy to become the king, he called him for a meal. He and his wife poisoned and they killed him. And then the whole life, he says, Macbeth murdered sleep. He loses sleep. You know, he gave in to his own emotions. He could not control his emotions. He could not keep it under his control. It is natural that greed will come, fear will come, jealousy will come, anger will come. All this will come. Because the mind is nothing but flow. Sometimes it flows without direction and it develops these things. But you must bring in your intellect. Then you will help yourself, otherwise you will destroy yourself. That's why he says you should have sentiments. But if you become sentimental, then you are allowing the sentiments to come in between you and your growth. You and your duty, obligation. That should not happen. The emotion that Arjuna had for his great-grandfather, Guru, he allowed it to come in between him and his obligation. That should not happen. If that happens, means you are having weak emotions. You are very weak. You are not strong. That's what it means. So that's what he says. You should have sentiments. There is a lot of thoughts associated. You know. There's nothing wrong in it. But you don't have to hold on to it. So, you may entertain passion and not turn passionate. Now see, these words you have to be careful because in the world you've got to be passionate. Now all these people talk like that. Now here you come to Vedanta, you should not be passionate. What is this Vedanta here? I don't know. In Vedanta, when we use the word passionate, what we mean is desire-ridden. What in Vedanta we say is, you will have desires. So you give a direction to your desire. Let it not be that you are just chasing your desires aimlessly without any goal or purpose in them. Then it becomes passionate. That's what he's saying. So he says emotionalism upsets your intellectual balance and thoughts. You lose your reasoning capacity. No. 2 minutes it would have taken for King Lear to sit and think. These two girls, the first two girls, when King Lear is splitting his kingdom on his 80th birthday, he says, I am going to renounce, I will give the kingdom to all three of you, equal parts, you know. But I'll just keep something for myself, because I don't have to keep coming to you. And this is what he's about to do on his birthday. He's calling the first two daughters and say, Goneril, what have you got to say on my birthday? She has no gratitude, nothing for her father. But she's interested in the kingdom. She talks so greatly of King Lear, just lip service, no interest whatsoever. And he falls for the flattery and says, oh, here is your 1/3. Second, vegan, same thing. Okay, 1/3. Third one is actually having a lot of love for her father. But her emotions are uncontrolled. She is a little straightforward. She starts straight. She says, when he calls her, Cordelia, my child, what have you got to say on my birthday? He thinks she'll also come and talk like this. She come and talks straight. She says, I'm not married. When I get married, I have a divided loyalty between you and my husband. This fellow gets agitated. Before marriage itself, you're talking about divided loyalty. You're banished. He didn't think. All she should have done is 2 minutes, she just have praised this fellow, should have got so much. In spite of it, if she's talking like this, she is actually the benefactor. But that much reasoning he didn't have. Why? Emotions don't allow you to think. It doesn't allow you to think. Many a times what happens when there's a death in the family, very close relative, father, mother, you know, you have a lot of emotions. You may take certain decisions at the time which you should not actually. You should relax. For some time you should take it. But many people take certain decisions at the time and then repent the whole life. So that's what he's saying. Your intellect rather than the impulse of your mind should guide your life's activities. Passive subservience to emotion ruins your material and even spiritual well-being. Your intellect rather than your impulse of your mind should guide your life's activities. Do not fall a prey to your likes and dislikes. Don't yield to feelings, emotions. Learn to become self-sufficient, which is the prerogative of the human race. So you should develop strength. Your emotions should become strength in your hands. Later on he's going to talk about ahimsa, for example. Because ahimsa itself became a weakness. Britishers fenced themselves with the cows and then from behind they used to shoot. He's going to talk about it. But I'm just saying now, because the values themselves start becoming your weak point. Why should it be? See, anything that we take up should aid in our growth. It should not become a stumbling block. Then it's a problem. This is what happens. You leave everything and go to an ashram, you get attached to the ashram. You go to a guru, you get attached. Everything, then they start becoming a stumbling block. The thing should be helping you to grow. Nothing should be compromised. You should be ready to compromise on anything, but not on your own growth. Because the goal of life is to grow towards the Atma, the Self. In fact, when you grow towards the Atma, it is not only good for you, it is good for the whole world also. That's why whenever there is Dharam Sankat, you know, this word Dharam Sankat is used in very many contexts. Arjuna was also in Dharam Sankat. And they say, no, when there is a choice between devil and deep sea, which one will you choose? Which one will you choose? if there is a choice between devil and deep sea?
I guess deep sea.
Pardon?
Deep sea.
Madhusriji will select deep sea. What else you will choose? Anybody else will choose devil, and for what reason?
I also think, Guruji, deep sea, because I suppose you have a chance of survival there, maybe.
See, when they say devil and deep sea, it's assumed that you don't know how to swim. So, devil will at least kill you immediately. Deep sea will kill you slowly, slowly you will drown and you will die. Whereas, when they say fire and frying pan, you know, fire and frying pan, meaning fire will kill you immediately. Frying pan, you will slowly be fried. Like they say, no, in hell, when you go to hell, they'll put you in one big kadai, thing like that. Just a, you know, discussion in many places. So, slowly, slowly you will be made to die. So, in that sense, anyway. But that is by the way. So, Arjuna was also in Dharam Sankat. As a Kshatriya, I'm supposed to establish righteousness, which means I have to fight against this Bhishma and Drona. But as a great grandson and my great grandfather who renounced the throne, I have to kill him for that very throne. So as a great grandson, my dharma is what? Not to kill my grandfather. Similarly, as a disciple of a guru. But as a Kshatriya, what should I do? So we say, whenever there is a choice between two dharmas, you should always choose the higher dharma. Higher dharma in the sense that will take you towards the self. That higher dharma you should choose. In the areas where you are confused, you go to a higher intellect, seek the help, your guru or somebody. But general guidance given is, always grow. Don't allow anything to come in between you and your growth. It's not your growth versus others' growth. When we talk about growth, we are not talking about swelling. You know, when you grow, you are growing from selfishness to unselfishness to selflessness. So when you grow that way, you would be not just catering yourself, you will be catering to larger circle. So when you grow, simultaneously it is good for the world also. So what is Shreya for you cannot be bad for the world. Not possible. What is good for you is good for everyone else. But what is pleasing to you is not necessarily pleasing to others. Or necessarily good for others. You get it? So that is what it is. Never ever succumb to your emotions. Continue.
Sorry. Oliver Goldsmith portrays an ideal human being in his poem, The Village Preacher. The poet describes the village preacher as one whose intellect reigns over the mind, feelings and emotions. His heart is replete with chaste emotion for his fellow beings, but never does he let his emotion disturb his intellectual poise. His head rules his heart. Goldsmith uses a striking metaphor to describe the grandeur of the preacher's personality, compares him to a tall cliff that rises well above the level of the clouds. The clouds gather around the breast of the mountain, but do not disturb the serenity of the peak. The clouds represent the emotion of the mind, the peak, the intellect, the emotion of the preacher never unsettles his intellectual awareness. The poem concludes with this metaphor. Should I continue?
Yeah, yeah, please.
To them his heart, his love, his grief were given, but all his serious thoughts had rest in heaven. As some tall cliff that lifts its awful form, swells from the whale midway leaves the storm, though round its breast the rolling clouds are spread, eternal sunshine settles on its head.
One of the most brilliant poetry by Oliver Goldsmith called Village Preacher. The village preacher is compared to a perfect human being. And the poem gives these few lines which Swamiji has quoted, perfectly delivers how a wise man functions in this world. You know, a wise man will have emotions, but will never allow his emotions to overpower his thinking. You know, so he says in this poetry, he is talking about a mountain whose cliff is exposed to the sun above, and the clouds are settled at the breastlet. So he's comparing, you know, to this tall cliff, and he says the clouds are compared to the emotions. The peak is the intellect. So he says in the paragraph that you read also, he's mentioned it. The peak is the intellect, emotions are the clouds. So he says to them, his heart, his love, his griefs were given. To whom? The villagers. To them means to the villagers. To them, his heart, his love, his griefs were given. Meaning he had gone through sadness when the villagers suffered. When the villagers were happy, he was also happy. He had perfect love. That's what he says. To them, his heart, his identification, his love, his griefs were given. But all his serious thoughts had rested in heaven. Heaven means divinity, the truth. As some tall cliff that lifts its awful form. He's comparing the village picture to the tall cliff. Just like this tall cliff lifts itself, its awful form. He has lifted himself to the height of serenity, divinity. Swells from the wave, meaning the valley, and midway leaves the storm. Meaning the clouds and all that, you know, it will be all in the middle level. Though round its breast the rolling clouds are spread, eternal sunshine settles on his head. Meaning at his chest level all the emotions are there. But his head was always rooted in the divinity, truth, obligation, duty, etc. So that is how a human being is supposed to function. In fact, a leader is supposed to function like this. He cannot afford to become a victim to his emotions. We know what is happening everywhere. You know, they become very emotional. That cannot happen. So, in Neelkanth, when you say, no? Neelkanth, Lord Shiva, same kind of significance is there. When the gods and demons got together and churned the Milky Ocean, in the Puranic story, lot of things came. Negative things also came. Not just the positive things, lot of negative things came. So hala hala poison came. When you churn your personality, as you started studying Vedanta, before that you will be thinking, you are much, much better than Bhagavan. So clean and perfect you are. This is your opinion about yourself before Vedanta. Now, once you start studying Vedanta and begin to understand about mind, selfishness and everything, you will start seeing so much of nonsense within yourself. So, if you are really a student of Vedanta correctly, you will have no time to sit and discuss about other people's negativities, shortcomings. Because you are seeing so much nonsense within yourself. So you will start working on cleansing that. You know? You will have no time to sit and criticize others. So, when you start seeing that is compared with halahala poison coming out when you churn the mountain. When you churn this personality through Vedantic study, lot of negativities also will come out. Like halahala poison came. And they don't know what to do with this halahala poison. So they said, let's pray to Lord Shiva. He is a tapasvi. He can consume and it will not affect him. So he consumed. And his wife, Parvatiji, Uma, who is the daughter of Himalayas, which is Vedanta, arrested it at the neck level because she was concerned that the poison can probably go and harm the heart or can go and harm the head. She arrested it there. You know? Hence he was called as Neelkanth. He had the poison at his neck only. So knowledge, Vedanta, Upanishads, born in Himalayas, is represented by Ma Parvati, And in a man of realization, Lord Shiva, the poison, the emotions are at the next level. It is never allowed to go and make you get dejected, nor hit the head and become haughty, egoistic. It keeps you the midway. That's what he's saying. Never do you give in to your emotions because you are lacking some self-sufficiency. I don't need somebody's praise. I'm not in dependence on somebody's praise. It's not that somebody is praising you, write a letter, please stop praising me. Nothing like that. But you are not dependent on any praise or censure. Let them do. That's called self-sufficiency. When you have your own perfect assessment about yourself, why would you fall for somebody's assessment? You won't. If the assessment is correct, of course you will accept it. But you won't fall a victim to it. So therefore he says, though round his breast the rolling clouds are spread, eternal sunshine settles on his head. The mountain which is swelling so much, always the peak is exposed to the sun. Similarly, you should always be exposed to the divinity, the truth, the realities of life. Not allow the emotions to alter. Continue.
To have emotions, therefore, is a virtue, but it would be a grievous error to let them interfere with your intellectual awareness and judgment. That would be tantamount to spiritual weakness. Nevertheless, history reveals that humans have let their emotions overthrow discretion and judgment. In the Bhagavad Gita, the great warrior Arjun was overwhelmed by his emotions, completely deluded. He lost his intellect. He could not carry out his obligatory duty as a warrior. He laid down his bow and arrow and refused to fight a righteous war. Lord Krishna rehabilitated him with the knowledge of right virtues, values of life. It cleared his delusion, set his thinking right. Arjuna rose over his weaker emotions and fulfilled his obligation as a warrior.
See, the thing is, you should have emotions which should be not concentrated in one area. But when it is not concentrated, doesn't mean it goes without control anywhere and everywhere. It needs to be channelized by the river, banks of the river, which is the intellect. That's all he's trying to say. You will have thoughts. But if the thoughts are all the time self-centered, then it is impure. But when it is given a direction towards the higher, it starts turning pure. That's all happens. And then he is going to talk about the facets of emotions. So when he talks about love and attachment, you will understand what he's trying to say. Why love is this way defined, why attachment is defined that way. You will see the logic, because if you understand this correctly. So that is why he quotes Bhagavad Gita and says Arjuna went through the same problem. It is because of Sri Krishna's knowledge that Arjuna rose above his emotions and did his duty. Otherwise, he allowed the emotions to overpower his skill, his duty. He was literally sitting and weeping. He didn't know what to do. He was completely confused. Initially, he was very clear that he should not fight. That much it hindered. But when Sri Krishna whipped him with powerful words, then he was saying, I am confused. Which one to choose? Dharam Sankat Island. Which one to choose? Never choose that which limits you. Choose always that which frees you. Makes you unlimited. Makes you free. When there is a choice, you have to always see that. That's why, if you understand this, it will help a lot in your life. There are many times people get confused. And I said, what are you talking about? We have to do these things. Then we will be growing economically. Business will spread. See, this is why Vedanta says, again and again, this example. For the naked eye, it appears as if life is coming from the moon. But when you probe, think carefully, you understand that there is no light coming from the moon. The light is coming from the sun. It's just reflected through the moon. Similarly, when the clouds are passing, it appears as if the moon is passing. Moon is not passing. The clouds are passing. But it appears that the moon is passing. Similarly, these concepts in the world, which is very much appreciated in today's context, if you really pause and think, they are actually deluding you. It appears as if that is going to give you freedom. Though it may appear that it is giving you freedom, it binds you. Though this appears to limit you today, but it frees you. See, if things are appearing as they are, no problem. But if they are appearing to be something else other than what they are, you should have the maturity to understand and then choose. How many of us have that? But that's the problem in the world today. We keep on asking, Bhagwan hai kya? Bhagwan hai to dikhao. I want to see. Prove. Vedanta, if you study, and it says, hey, yeah. How are you saying prove? The word you prove, you are saying through your mouth. Your mouth is made up of five elements. The five elements are insentient. So your mouth is insentient. How did it speak that word prove? It said that word prove because though it is insentient, it is enlivened by the Atma. So the very mouth becomes eligible or becomes effective to speak is by the help of Atma. And once you start speaking, you start denying the very Atma. So Atma is there, not seen. World is actually not there, but seems to exist. Atma really exists, but not visible to your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, available for mind. It's not available to the mind, to the intellect, no. But it is actually there. So the world is actually not there, but appears to be there. This is why we need Vedanta. Similarly, in life also, when you take decisions, certain decisions seems to be freeing you. They only temporarily solve the problem, but they are going to bind you for long. Certain decisions seems to limit you today, but they give you freedom forever. But 99.99% of the people will choose the first one. Because they are deluded. So when emotion comes, it appears, yes, that's how it should be. In fact, when he talks about attachment, he will explain. What you think as people who have identification, they are detrimental to their own circle to which they are identified. All kinds of nonsense in their emotions. In your emotions to your children, you destroy them. Either you make them vegetables or you make them a rebel. Not as original thinkers, independent thinkers. Because you pampered so much. You didn't do that with your children, you will do that with your grandchildren. Where you will do? But if you understand this, you will not do. So that's what he's saying. You must learn to become self-sufficient. Continue. Facets of emotion. So in this topic, he discusses few emotions. Not all the emotions, but few emotions he discusses and makes us understand what is a weak emotion, what is a strong emotion, how we have to move from weak emotion to strong emotion. Continue, please.
Facets of emotion. The human mind is composed of a wide variety of emotion. It ranges from obscene to pure, gross to subtle, demonic to divine. The quality of the emotion would depend on the direction it takes. An emotion that merely satisfies one's selfish, self-centered interest would be classified as impure, ignoble. Whereas that which extends beyond one's personal interest to accommodate the welfare of the community at large would be pure, noble. And when the emotion rises to embrace the entire universe, becomes all-pervasive, it is considered divine. Emotions become detrimental when they are concentrated in your selfish interest. Emotion acts like medicine. Medicine cures a disease when administered in proper dosage. The same medicine turns harmful, even fatal, when consumed in a concentrated form. That explains why medicine bottles bear the stamp poison on their labels. It is meant to warn users against concentrated dosage. So too, Vedanta cautions you against the perils of excessive egocentric emotion. A selfish emotion constricted to extremity could prove fatal. It is in your interest to heed this warning and avoid the devastating effects of emotion. Should I continue?
Yeah.
A few emotions are described below and analyzed. Their different features projected. The emotion being the same, the difference in its quality and texture makes or mars a person. Study them carefully. Chasten your emotions. Make good use of them to mold yourself into a perfect human being.
Yeah. So, this is just saying that if an emotion takes a selfish direction, it is weakness. If it takes a, it is impure. If it takes a unselfish or selfless direction, it is pure. And then it gives an example of poison medicine. That's why medicine bottles bear the stamp poison on their labels. Why? Because if it is, the dosage is missing, it turns poison. So you must understand, it is helpful provided you direct it. You hand over the reins in the hands of emotions, will be finished. So that's why this, below we are discussing few emotions to make you understand what is a weak emotion, what is a strong emotion. Continue.
Love. Love is being in harmony with one and all. Love means realizing your identity with the world, your oneness with beings. To regard them as you would the different parts of your physical body. Every part of the body is dear to you. You look at it, look after it as your whole being. Be it your fingers or toes, your eyes or ears. So must you feel and realize the unity with your fellow beings. Your oneness with the entire universe. That is love. A feeling that helps you maintain a perfect harmony with the world. You then live in peace and bliss. And if you lack the feeling of oneness, consider yourself separate and distinct from the rest, you would fall out of harmony with the world. You deprive yourself of this great emotion of love and live a life of suffering and sorrow. That is the law.
This word love, the most misunderstood word and abused, meaning everybody uses, I love you, you love me, love, 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 everywhere. Now, what is love? Love is nothing but feeling of oneness, identification. Love means feeling of oneness, identification. That's all it is. So he says, love is being in harmony with one and all. So when you say that I love you means there is a feeling of oneness with that person. That only is love. And that feeling of oneness should be unconditional. So that is why he says love means realizing your identity with the world, with the people, whoever it is. You identify with a common denominator. North Indian, South Indian, East Indian, West Indian, doesn't matter. Unnecessarily, we don't go by the features of the physical body or the dark skin. We don't go by all that. We are Indians, period. Because you see the common denominator. When you fail to see the common denominator, then it's not love. So that's what it says, your oneness with beings, to regard them as you would the different parts of your physical body. All the parts of your body, you consider it as yourself only. You consider each one of them as yourself only. Somebody touches your head, you say, why are you touching me? Somebody touches your feet, you say, why are you touching me? So, you are pervading from head to toe. You are that. So that's why he says, every part of the body is dear to you. You look at it, look after it as your whole being, as you yourself, whatever part it may be. Your oneness with the entire universe is also like that. You must feel and realize the unity with your fellow beings. What hurts you hurts them also. If somebody breaches your trust, it hurts you. So when you breach their trust, obviously it will hurt them. So your oneness with the entire universe, that is the feeling that helps you maintain a perfect harmony with the world. This is called love. Then if you have this love, you will be peaceful and you will be spreading harmony everywhere. If you lack this feeling of oneness and consider yourself separate from others, distinct from the rest, you would fall out of harmony with the world. This is the ego, no? We separate ourselves from the total. When we separate ourselves, I am supreme, I am inferior, all these things come.
That's so, Guruji, may I ask, why do they say that truth is always difficult? Which is true. When you speak the truth, when you speak the truth, you're generally not very popular, or you don't...
You mean difficult in the sense for the person who's speaking or for the person who's receiving?
Receiving.
Hmm.
So, if it is said with love...
It is not catering to the ego of the person. See, if you're a good friend of somebody, if you talk to them what they want to listen, they'll say, very fast friend, because she goes on pampering my ego. But if you are a true friend, you'll say, listen here, this is not correct. They teach me here. Then it's not catering to the ego. It's not music to their ears. Obviously, it will be difficult. This is what happens.
So then the harmony and love and everything goes out of the window. If you care for...
Pardon? No. See, it's like this. Harmony, you are misunderstanding again. It is not that you please everybody and maintain the harmony. How long you can do that? One day, 2 days? Eventually, it will be a big chaos. Because that fellow's expectation will grow more. In the beginning itself, if you do, initially there may be some misunderstanding. But permanent harmony, that fellow will understand over a period of time. The harmonious relationship will build over a period of time. When you say that in a sweet way. You understand? See?
Yeah, no, I was talking in general, in general with the society. Hmm. That if you are in company with everyone and you were talking, and if if it's a little away from the truth and you try to bring in a fact, I'm talking about factual truth, because that's what is important, I feel, to be honest, nothing to do with the ego. But, and you, I don't know, broader aspect of love, what I understand from you is that, you know, you care
what
for
it. What do you mean by nothing to do with ego?
I'm not saying out of ego. I'm not trying to be right out of ego. I'm stating facts. But, you know, for example, that, oh, but he's a poor man. And they say, oh, but he doesn't work. But he still is a poor man. So that's a fact. And that goes away from the general acceptance of the truth, where they feel that, oh, he's like that because. But he still remains factually a poor man. So then you tend to deviate from the fact and remain not popular, but remain with, go with the herd. Is that how it should be?
No, it should not be that way. See, for example, somebody is poor and they are begging. Their hands are fine, legs are fine, everything is fine. And they want to leave this life because they want to continue being lazy. You love them. All these examples are coming later on when we talk about kindness. You love them. So popularity is just give them 5 rupees. Yeah, they are hungry, they are poor now. Let them eat. So it's easy to do. A difficult thing to do there would be, listen, I'm not giving you this. You better work and earn your needs. Or I will help you find a job. You know, or whatever it is, whichever way you want to do. But you're not pampering to their easy way out. You love them, but you're making them, wanting to make them strong, but you're interested in their welfare. Now, this is not popular. Popular is just give 5 rupees or 10 rupees and then just move. Show that you are kind. And actually you are creating more beggars. Lazy fellows are home. So, it is difficult to stand by truth. And truth will not bring results overnight. But truth will bring results whenever it brings results, permanent results it will bring. Over a period of time. That's what we are saying. You will bring peace, not just to yourself, to the other person also. But it takes time.
Thank
but
you.
But you may not immediately understand. And it is tough. If it's easy, everybody will live on their true side. You just compromise, compromise, compromise. A lot of people do that. It is difficult to live by truth. It's not easy. Love is difficult. Attachment is easy. But love is good. Attachment is not good. Anything good is difficult. No? That is why we don't need scripture. If good is easy, we don't need scripture, I'm telling you. Nobody needs scriptures. The difficulty is in choosing the good. So you need to strengthen your buddhi and then go by that. That's the thing. So, like they say, you know, gold becomes pure by putting it in fire. Oh, I don't want to put gold in fire. Poor gold will have to go through all this heat. So, may also prisoner reckoning. You never become free. Pure. So, you want something good to happen because you love your son, you love your daughter, you love your grandchildren. You will tell them. Tell them the sense. You will also fold the bed when you wake up. You will make them fold the bed when they wake up. You will wash your plate. You set an example making them wash their plates. So, they will become more self-sufficient. You will teach those values by living. Otherwise, beta, you chode, I will do it, you keep that fellow in the ICU permanently. So it is tough. But if you really have love, you will choose this difficulty. See, that is why they say truth is difficult. Truth is not easy. truth is difficult. But when you understand the truth and start living by it, then you will actually understand it's very easy. In the beginning, because the mind rebels, na, mind wants immediate instant comfort. Mind doesn't want to push itself. But whenever you, in any field, if you have done it through that way, somebody is talking in between. So, why is truth difficult? It's difficult because it doesn't give you instant results. Ego wants instant results. Pleasing gives you that. Truth doesn't give you that. But truth will give you permanent results. It will make you strong. Then you understand, oh, this is why my father and mother was a little difficult with me. It's for my good. Then your respect and regard for them grows like it. At that time, you know, father is not giving, everybody getting it, I am not getting, you get agitated. But slowly, slowly as you grow, you begin to understand. You have tremendous gratitude and love for your parents as you grow. So let's continue next week. We have done now two. We will start with love again next week. We just finished one paragraph. Let's conclude. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Prakrute Swabhava Karomi Yadyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarthaya.
Hari Om Guru.